Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host Gavin Jackson, and this episode is for the week of September 3rd, 2019. Though Democratic candidates continue to stream through the state, this week we're looking at the Republican Party in South Carolina, including Vice President Mike Pence's recent visit to rally the Republican base, some of whom have had problems with the current state of Donald Trump's party. And Pence already appears to be laying his 2024 groundwork in Nikki Haley's backyard. How are the two getting along? And we look at former Congressman Mark Sanford's political future. It's season three. It's the start of season three. Yes, it's September, which just means we start a new season. So that's how that works. And with that comes change and reflection. Well, not so much change and very little reflection, actually. But hey, if you have any suggestions for us or thoughts on the pod, send us a direct message on Twitter or Instagram, and we'll take it under consideration. We love hearing from you guys. You know our handle, it's at @SCLEDEPOD, at @SCLEDPOD. And even if you don't have any constructive criticism, is what I'm going to use, DM us your address and we'll send you some stickers, because we got plenty of them, y'all. Here at the South Carolina Lead, every week we give you a roundup of news, insight into the week's biggest stories, campaign trail intrigue, and don't worry, we still have Russ McKinney for season three. You can listen to all four sections as you lament the end of summer and down one of many pumpkin spice lattes. Just kidding, it's way too soon. Stop drinking them. Put the PSLs down. Or while you slowly come to realize that the Illuminati created the fried chicken sandwich wars. Hungry, too hungry to think, what are we distracted by? What are they hiding from us? And now for our brief quorum call. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present, but here in the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. First up, we're looking for an intern to join the lead this fall to help us with production and research work. If you or someone you know is an energetic college student who's interested in journalism, podcasting, and/or politics, check out the link in our show notes to apply. You can find our show notes on scetv.org/SCLEDE and click the episode. And now to the news. Number one, the Post and Courier reports that South Carolina should improve prison officers' training, better manage gang members and penalize their leaders, and offer inmates more opportunities to shave time off their sentences to incentivize good behavior. This according to the Legislative Audit Council. The LAC report also found inconsistencies in how and whether inmates and visitors are searched for contraband. It's unclear how much contraband, such as cell phones, is found because it's not properly tracked, the audit found. Number two, the state newspaper reports that Santee Cooper plans to shut down one of its two remaining coal-fired power stations in the next decade and cut about 200 jobs as the state-owned utility moves to eliminate coal as an energy source altogether. This according to company officials. The company's Winyah Generating Station near Georgetown will be closed in two phases, beginning with the closure of two coal units in 2023. Number three, move over Great Pacific Garbage Patch. The Trash Mountain at Able Contracting in Jasper County continues to burn. The Environmental Protection Agency and the South Carolina Department of Environmental Health and Control work to contain it, the Ellen Packer reports. For more than 2 months, the fire has released noxious fumes and an acrid odor. Since then, residents near the pile have fled their homes. Businesses have been forced to close early or, in one instance, leave the area. The air quality has ranged from dangerous levels to good. And number four, the Post and Courier reports that high rents, low incomes, and expensive houses have created an affordability gap that's squeezing nearly a third of South Carolina households. This according to the South Carolina Housing Needs Assessment, the first study of the issue since 2002. One key reason for the squeeze is despite economic growth and unemployment rates near record lows, real wages have remained lower in 2018 than at the end of the Great Recession, while rents and housing prices have soared. Translation, everything's going up except your paycheck. And now for our Florida Man News segment. Every week we give you a headline, a little taste of the most captivating Florida Man news. Headline, Florida Man tries to fight Michael Jackson impersonator outside club. Gets arrested. And just like saying adieu to summer and realizing that, yeah, the campaign trail's heating up and we're really not going to have any real vacation until Christmas break, but will there even be a break? Because the primary will be around the corner and the legislative session will start and there will be so many big issues in the State House, and then all those guys are up for re-election, and then the 2020 primaries in June, and it's even not going to have much of a summer. And then the Senate race in the fall, which will lead to the 2021, the governor's race start again, and I mean, when's the campaign trail going to end? I mean, is it going to keep going?
Hey,
I don't know!
Hey, come here. Come on.
Sorry.
Bring it down. Just bury it. Just bury the
lead.
The
lead's moving, and we buried the lead.
Oh, there we go.
Democratic presidential candidates continue to travel the Palmetto State campaign trail these days, and now that it's after Labor Day, this will only increase leading up to the February primary. But remember, we're still a heavily Republican state, and that was on display last week at Congressman Jeff Duncan's Faith and Freedom Barbecue in Anderson. There were more than 3,000 gathered in support of conservative values, while Vice President Mike Pence and other speakers extolled the need to re-elect President Donald Trump and Pence to a second term in 2020. Yes, we'll put those rumors to rest about Nikki Haley replacing Pence in 2020. Now, folks were less enthusiastic to see former Congressman Mark Sanford, who is considering challenging Trump, though it's still not clear if he'd even be on the primary ballot in his home state. Joining me to discuss all this is Meg Kennard with the Associated Press and Mayan Schechter with the state newspaper, who also wrote a recent story on the concerns South Carolina Republicans face under Trump that we'll also look at. Welcome to you both, and welcome to Season 3.
Hi, good to be here.
Hello.
Glad I could peel you guys off the campaign trail for a minute. Meg, lead off with us, for us. You were at the Congressman's barbecue, the big Faith and Freedom barbecue blowout. What were some of the takeaways from this event? What's kind of the purpose of this big event? And what did you pick up on up there?
Sure. This is something that Jeff Duncan puts on every year, and it has become known as the largest gathering of conservatives in South Carolina. I think the last official count, we got several counts throughout the night, but I think the biggest number that we got was about 3,000 people that were gathered at the Anderson Civic Center. And this is an opportunity for pretty much most high-level elected officials in the Republican Party here in South Carolina to come together. There were brief remarks from the governor, from the lieutenant governor, from several members of the Republican members of the delegation. Joe Wilson was the only House member who wasn't there. Tim Scott also did not speak either, but Lindsey Graham did. So this is an opportunity to kind of get the energy up to, you know, not really proximate to any election in particular, although if there had been a, you know, big summer primary, it would have been just recently compared to this. But this is an opportunity for the Republican Party to kind of just have a moment to be energetic, to talk about where their party is going, and in this case, to talk a lot about objectives that are being, in their minds, met by the Trump administration, and then to use it as a call forward for a need to reelect President Trump in 2020. With Vice President Pence there as the keynote speaker, he obviously could play a large part in that and talk about what he feels that the administration is accomplishing in Washington, and to say to these pretty hardcore conservatives, I mean, this is the upstate, so it's a pretty conservative area, but these are the people who are going to be those active ones to show up when there's no election to really be jazzed about right now, to make that argument to them of, look, this is really why you need to give us another 4 years of this.
Mm-hmm. Mayan, it sounded like, you know, there's a pretty good base up there, like Meg was talking about, and Vice President Pence said it's been 2.5 years of promises made and promises kept. We're just getting started, South Carolina. With God's help, we'll keep America great again. We'll keep America great, sorry. Mayan, what were your takeaways? I know Meg just kind of harped on a lot of things. Did you have any different perspectives from that event?
No, I think certainly that the voters that showed up to the barbecue were already very excited to vote for Trump in 2020. This obviously added a little bit more spark to that. There were some very few people that were at the barbecue who weren't necessarily huge Trump supporters, but were there because the vice president was in their backyard, so why not show up? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would agree with Meg. It was certainly an opportunity to kind of re-energize a base that's really already energized to support Trump next year.
And this is also kind of, like we're talking about, Vice President Pence also starting to subtly lay his groundwork for 2024. You know, he was also involved in Lindsey Graham's re-election bid announcement. Mm-hmm. He's been to the state before for other things, too. So, Meg, were we picking up on any of that up there? Was this sort of a pseudo, hey, keep an eye out for Mike Pence in 2024 speech, or was he really just kind of really focusing on 2020?
It's definitely an opportunity for the vice president to individually elevate his own profile. As you mentioned, he was here to help Senator Graham kick off his own reelect. And that was something that was mentioned several times by various people at the rostrum. Hey, we need to send Lindsey Graham back as well. But yeah, this is a good opportunity for Vice President Pence to really kind of continue to remind people of who he is individually. I mean, yes, he is a major cheerleader, probably the top cheerleader for the Trump administration, and that makes sense as the vice president. But I feel like, you know, the people that I talked to and saw at that event, they were very excited. And that could come, as Mayon said, from some of the ones who are just big Trump supporters in general. And so this is the administration. This is kind of seeing it as one thing. And of course, you know, if the number two guy is going to be there, well, yeah, we'll come see him too. But we've seen Vice President Pence campaign for Governor McMaster during his reelect cycle. Mm-hmm. We've seen him come down for Senator Graham. We've seen him now come down for this event. So, yes, I would say that it. Who knows exactly what happens in 2024, but it's certainly a good opportunity for him to get his face out in front of South Carolina voters.
And nonetheless, in Nikki Haley's backyard, too, Mayan.
Oh, exactly. And most voters that I spoke to before and after the barbecue told me that they would welcome Mike Pence running in 2024. Mm-hmm. When asked about Nikki Haley, most had reservations, but they were very excited about a Mike Pence presidency future.
And in this conservative part of the upstate, I mean, let's remember, this is the Jeff Duncan Faith and Freedom barbecue. He is one of the more conservative members of the delegation. So I would imagine that many of the voters who would support Congressman Duncan in that area would also ideologically align with a lot of what Vice President Pence stands for in terms of his stances on very conservative red meat issues. Mm-hmm. And so I could see that there would be a lot of support there just inherently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll have some more data about Nikki Haley and polling too, but I want to talk about the recent dust up between them a little bit, looking at rumors where she got on Twitter the other day and said, Vice President Pence has been a dear friend of mine for years. He has been a loyal and trustworthy VP to the president. He is my complete support. And that was Haley talking about trying to put these rumors to rest. And those rumors, the tweet kind of came a little bit out of left field because it was about a few months after the Wall Street Journal op-ed by Democrat Andrew Stein, who floated the idea that Haley could replace Pence as vice president on the ticket in 2020 to help attract more suburban women voters, which is a huge thing the Trump campaign is definitely targeting. It seemed a little odd, but again, that's not unusual for, you know, any campaign to look at possibly switching to the VP midway through when you're going up for reelect. I mean, they did this with Biden and Clinton. But it was just kind of interesting to see that come out and then kind of see the fallout. Everyone's like, well, did anyone even ask about this tweet? But I think, you know, Political might have prodded her a little bit before for a story they were working on. But it seemed like it just really did kind of come out of left field, Meg.
Yeah, I mean, there's been speculation, clearly. Well, what is Nikki Haley going to do? We've talked about it here many times, and it is still very much an unknown in terms of politically. Is there a next move for her? And if so, what is it? But yes, this whole notion of a, let's just sub her in. She was very popular in the Trump administration. She left it on her own terms, on good terms, and has continued to, you know, levy criticism, I think, where it kind of falls into her lane, maybe some of the foreign policy related things that she was involved with as UN ambassador. But overall, you know, I think that it's an interesting thing that political watchers and politicos want to bandy about, right? Because it's something neat to talk about. Oh, well, what if we get rid of this guy and we sub in this person who's pretty popular? But, you know, when the vice president was down here, he talked to Eric Bolling from Blaze TV and, you know, straight up said, what I can tell you is that Nikki Haley and I are close friends and that we're both focused on this reelect in 2020. That's from him. And then she tweeted, as you just mentioned, you know, let's all just kind of leave this alone. That doesn't mean there's nothing happening behind the scenes.
Sure.
I would never say that that completely counts anything out. But, you know, it certainly does seem that at least on the surface of things that Nikki Haley is committed to helping reelect the president. And then from 2024, who knows where she goes from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Mayan, you could probably, you know, interpret that tweet as, you know, some saying maybe it's her stirring the pot. But if you kind of look at her lines when it comes to dealing with anything with like any elections, you know, when she was in the Oval Office, she said, I'm not running, you know, she's been really consistent with that messaging. So you could maybe even see that tweet as, you know, emphasizing her loyalty to the Trump administration, to saying, hey, we're on the same page here. We're unified in 2020.
Sure. And I think it helps her more to tweet something like that than to tweet what she's tweeted before at the president about, you know, this not being helpful or bless your heart or something like that. Being supportive of the administration and the administration's goals of running again and being reelected again, I think she sees as helpful if she does ever decide to make a run for the White House. When that happens, I don't know. But to me, it just proves more helpful than hurtful in her case.
And who knows if that does happen for her in 2024, maybe she and Vice President Pence end up in the same primary pool. Who knows? I mean, that very well could happen. But you're absolutely right, Myron, I think, in that Nikki Haley would gain nothing from going negative against someone in the administration, pretty much, you know, for any reason, but especially optically here in South Carolina, which no doubt will be a big battleground in that primary season for sure.
Yeah, no one wants to be called out by the president or anyone else on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, well, she did say that this is so unnecessary. Eye roll emoji when she was talking about Trump's tweet, looking at Elijah Cummings, talking about Baltimore. And then Kellyanne Conway wrote back to her, this is unnecessary. So, you know, it's a little bit of that back and forth there. Obviously, she's kind of like keeping it at a distance. But Andy Shane did write a story recently about these numbers from the Post and Courier Change research poll that show that she does have about a 75% favorability rating in South Carolina and around the same number, say, her policies closely aligned with Trump. So kind of what you're talking about with Duncan and Pence, but I would assume that would probably be higher with Pence. And also strong support from independents who are, you know, important for these kind of runs. You can find a link to Shane's story and then also a link to a political story talking about the brewing Haley-Pence rivalry because they were just recently in Aspen together at some donor event. And it sounded a little testy maybe, or they were just, you know, a little distant from each other, which is, you know, that's going to be the case going forward, I would assume, even though they've been allies in the past.
Right.
Hey, 2024 is on the horizon. But let's stop talking about 2024
and
focus on 2020 because we might have a South Carolinian running for president.
Uh-oh.
A man by the name Mark Sanford. You might have heard of him. Like I said, we're taping this on Thursday before Labor Day. So, like, you know, calm down. Don't tweet us if, you know, he announces or doesn't announce when this drops. But let's assume that Mark Sanford is running just based on what we've been hearing from people and based on that likelihood. And he's been on this month-long listening tour in South Carolina and other early voting states, Meg. And just going around listening to people. Hasn't said anything one way or another, but hasn't formed an exploratory committee. But just wants to listen to people. But that feedback, that overwhelming feedback from what we're hearing is, please don't do it. Don't do it. So then who is he listening to if he's on a feedback tour and everyone's telling him not to do it?
That's a great question. Certainly if he'd been listening to the 3,000 people gathered at the Faith and Freedom Barbecue that Jeff Duncan recently held, he would have heard them yell, Trump, Trump, go take a hike, go back to the Appalachian Trail, go to Argentina. Lots of things that people were yelling at Mark Sanford as he tried to talk to Mayon and me, as he tried to do other media interviews. There was a constant presence. Mark Sanford, it would appear at this point, is still most likely really listening to his internal voice that has brought him to perhaps a compulsion to seek the Republican nomination. Those of us who have followed Mark Sanford, who've covered him, I've covered him for 15 years, we've always known that he has this internal desire and calling. I think he sees it as a calling to serve and to enter public office. He told us the other night that he's gotten green lights. He keeps using the phrase green lights from people. He was in New Hampshire recently. He was just in Iowa this week. And whatever it is that he's gathering from these private meetings, he's not having big rallies. He's not going around and going to like the local Democratic Party meeting and, you know, doing all this. He is doing some media interviews. He talked to a colleague of mine in Iowa yesterday. But it really seems that he is continuing to see himself as following this path that he is just drawn to, and this is something that he was put here to do. Obviously, it's hard for us to say at this exact moment, but it, from what the commentary he gives us and the media interviews he's done, I don't really see that there's anything necessarily that's telling him no, at least from what's coming from what is inside.
And then, Mayon, like, raising money would be difficult to do. I mean, with such a lack of support. And it's not even clear if the Republican Party in South Carolina will even have a primary next year to accommodate people like him and Joe Walsh and Bill Weld. So what does that mean then? What does this campaign become? Just a campaign of being on the airwaves, being, you know, antagonizing Trump on CNN and MSNBC essentially for the foreseeable future?
It may be. I mean, he's certainly getting a lot of airtime just from mulling decision about whether he's going to run against Trump in a primary. Obviously, Sanford has made this entire potential of running about the debt, about being a fiscal conservative. And that's something that he continues to say, that he's not hearing from the president, that he's not hearing from the Republican Party. So even if Mark Sanford doesn't run, he probably sees it as a success that he can go on television and keep beating the drum on this issue over and over and over, to the point where at some point Trump will have to tweet about him, or like the other day, or will be asked a question at a future debate or in the Oval Office by a reporter. So Sanford probably sees that as a miniature success, but I don't even know if it's just money that could be his problem. It's also staffing. And then it also comes down to figuring out where he would run, which ballot he could get on. And that still would remain, remains to be seen.
And let's be quite frank, we probably would not have mentioned Mark Sanford today or in other recent episodes if not for this whole endeavor. So if part of the impetus behind some of this is to enter into the national conversation on whatever it is, for him it is the debt and what he sees as an impending doom in terms of the nation's finances, then yes, he has already achieved some success. But you're absolutely right, in terms of being on a ballot somewhere, it's not likely to happen in a lot of places where, you know, states are really just saying, you know what, we've already got our nominee. We're behind President Trump, so let's just not do this.
Yeah, and we're going to find out from the SCGOP on September 7th, looking at if they're going to have a primary for this very reason. And, you know, there is precedent. I did see a fact in an AP story recently about how they did cancel the primaries in 84 to help Ronald Reagan, then also 2004 for George W. Bush. So there were some polling that did show that Republicans do want to have a primary, keep it open for these very reasons. But at the same time, there's precedent there. So,
and Democrats have done the same thing before.
Yeah. So it's a bipartisan effort there. I kind of want to wrap up here. And Mayon, you did have a recent story looking into the state of Republican voters in South Carolina, many of whom feel forgotten during this party of Trump. But at the same time, many people have gotten voices now that Trump's in office. What did you find, and how difficult was it reporting the story? You kind of mentioned how hard it was to get some people on record talking about this situation.
It was very difficult. To answer your second question first, yeah, it was very difficult getting people on the record to talk about it. It's a very emotional issue for a lot of voters to, for the first time, think about switching parties and voting for a Democrat. Even when I was interviewing the main woman for the story, when we were just going over facts the next day to make sure that I had everything correct, and I mentioned that in 2016 she voted for Hillary, there was a deep sigh. There was a lot of hesitation. So yeah, a lot of my interviews, unfortunately, I could not put names in my story. But what I heard overwhelmingly is that there is Republican voter fatigue. How widespread that fatigue is, I think that remains to be seen. Obviously, we'll see maybe in the Democratic primary next year, or we'll see that in the November general election next year. But there is definitely some fatigue from the tweeting, fatigue from the rhetoric. And I think one of the best signals, or one of the best examples of that, is that I was talking to Matt Moore, the former chairman of the SCGOP, saying that the Republican Party has a really big problem with women. Mm-hmm. And it's mostly women that I was talking to, unfortunately, off the record, that were telling me that they had this fatigue, that they were just frustrated, that they didn't know how to talk to their kids about these issues, that they didn't know how to talk to their friends anymore. And in going back a little bit, another, I think, example of some of this fatigue we saw in the first district race, where Joe Cunningham beat Katie Arrington. But yeah, the fatigue remains to be seen how widespread it is. When you ask current GOP chairman Drew McKissick about it, I mean, Drew McKissick points out that, look, the Republican Party right now in the state is bigger than it has been. Mm-hmm.
Donations are up.
Attendance is up. And if you look at Donald Trump's support favorability numbers here in South Carolina, they're also pretty good among Republican voters. But there is a sense of not being sure where they fit in. It's one of those openings that Mark Sanford sees himself being able to weed in. But again, how widespread that is remains to be seen.
Well, during the 2016 GOP primary cycle, I think one thing that we all saw, I mean, as now with the Democrats, then there was a very wide swath of Republican contenders of different ideologies, of different sorts of candidates on this electoral buffet. And so Republicans had lots of choices they could make. But ultimately, as Democrats say they would like to do around around whoever their eventual nominee is, Republicans did solidify and they coalesced. And some that I've talked to, and I'm sure Mayon and you as well, some say that they held their noses and just voted for Donald Trump in favor of having a Republican president, full stop, end of story. But now, after several years of a Trump administration, I don't think that it's surprising that all of those big tent Republicans who really, some of whom had to make a difficult choice in supporting Trump in 2016, are now thinking, you know what, like, do I really have to do that again? If so, how am I going to maybe justify that to my kids or other people who may be questioning making a decision like that again?
And if you have a moderate Democratic nominee.
Right.
And I think it hinges on that, because most of the voters that I talked to, now some said that they would abstain no matter who the Democrat is. But I think this 2020 will be much different than 2016. You saw Democrats and Republicans vote for third party candidates who were upset at either the nominee or the second contender. And so I think 2020 is unique in that you may see for the first time Republicans, obviously, if there's no third party contender that they like, voting for if the nominee is someone like Biden. I mean, the overwhelming thing that I heard was that if the nominee on the Democratic side is a very progressive candidate, they would be unwilling to back that candidate. And they may also do again like they did in 2016, hold their nose and vote for Trump. But if that Democratic nominee is moderate, the name that came up the most was Joe Biden, then they would be willing to go into a voting booth and vote for him as well.
Mm-hmm. And especially when we have open primaries, you can go ahead and start go pick your favorite
right.
anyway.
Republican primary, then that opens it up.
Right.
So you can go ahead and get your moderate potentially on the ballot in there in November then. So a lot going on, with the Republican Party in South Carolina. We're not forgetting about anyone. We're just focused on the news, and the news happens to be a lot of Democrats coming through South Carolina because it's a pretty big primary coming up in February.
And it's so funny. You know, we go around the state, particularly on Monday night, we're in a room full of conservatives and Republicans. And there and then in texts and other private conversations I've heard over and over from Republicans, hey, you know, are you guys going to cover us? Are you going to come to any of our events? And first off, I'm here. Yes, I am going to cover your event. But also, let's keep in mind, in 2016, there were 17 announced Republicans, all of whom campaigned in South Carolina.
Right.
And I'm
we
sure you
there.
Guys, we covered every single one. So
And the legislature.
On top of an entire Republican state delegation, minus two, and you know all of that.
Yeah.
So, yes, there's a lot of activity on the Democratic side, but certainly in South Carolina, there's always going to be activity on the Republican side, too. And we'll be there when they're doing stuff.
For sure, 100%. Thanks again. Yeah, you guys can follow along with Meg Kinnard and Mayon Schechter in their reporting and on Twitter, because we are all out there rocking and rolling. So
up and down the interstate.
Yeah. Thank you guys for joining us.
Thanks.
It's that time again for some campaign trail news updates. That's right, campaign trail, not going anywhere in season 3, y'all. If anything, it's going to get hotter, dirtier, stickier, humid, campaignier and trailier. We're looking at the latest in 2020 campaign-related movements in South Carolina, state campaign news, and highlights from the state's congressional delegation. Starting off, Congressman James Clyburn will host a town hall with Senator Elizabeth Warren to discuss their legislation, the Student Loan Debt Relief Act. This town hall will take place on the campus of South Carolina State University at the Dr. Barbara Vaughn Fine Arts Center Recital Hall on Tuesday, September 3rd. The doors open at 5 and the program begins at 6. You can find an RSVP link to this event in our show notes. The most recent Post and Courier Change research poll shows former Vice President Joe Biden maintaining his comfortable lead in South Carolina with 36% versus Senator Elizabeth Warren at 17%, Senator Bernie Sanders at 16%, Senator Kamala Harris at 12%, and Mayor Pete Buttigieg with 5%. Biden's lead in South Carolina is the largest among the primary's early voting states. And that poll is one of several used to justify who makes it onto the debate stage. For the third debate, only 10 of the 21 candidates have qualified, which means only one debate night, September 12th. In addition to those five candidates I just mentioned in the poll will be Senators Cory Booker and Amy Klobuchar, Julian Castro, Beto O'Rourke, and Andrew Yang. In our final section, Did You Know?, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics or government. It's named after the parliamentary procedure that lawmakers use when speaking to each other. And did you know that South Carolina Public Radio's Russ McKinney is back with us for season three with more trivia? Russ, welcome back at season three. Hello.
Season three?
Season three, yeah. It's just a demarcation line. September, we start a new season.
Time flies.
Yes, it sure does. What do you got for us, Russ?
So my question for you to begin with is, will there be an interesting Republican presidential primary in South Carolina?
There could be.
Next year.
Depends on what the GOP decides to do.
The Republicans have done very well with their presidential primary in South Carolina. As you know, it started in 1980, and of course it holds the distinction for normally whomever wins the South Carolina primary goes on to win the Republican nomination. There's only been one exception since 1980, and that was the warm-up question. Right, Newt Gingrich in 2012. But did you know that a handful of successful Republican presidential candidates have run in South Carolina's presidential preference primary more than once? Actually run twice. But our question is, which of the following well-known Republican presidential candidates have only run once in the South Carolina primary? So the others have run twice, but the correct answer is whichever one maybe just
I feel like all of our Republican friends are already yelling at the radio right now.
Well, not so fast.
Not so fast. Season three, spicy.
A, Ronald Reagan. Remember him? B, George Bush. That's the first George Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush. C, John McCain. D, Mitt Romney.
So this is going to be, this is like we were talking about in the podcast where we said that we didn't have a 1984 primary.
Correct.
Which for Ronald Reagan, so then, I mean, that's what we're talking about.
Pretty good. Ronald Reagan is the one, the 1980 primary. George Herbert Walker Bush ran in 1980 also, and then he ran again in 1988 when he won the nomination. John McCain ran in 2000 and again in 2008 when he secured the nomination. Mitt Romney ran in 2008 and again in 2012 when he secured the nomination. And there was one more. Bob Dole ran in 1988 and then again in 96 when he was victorious.
Are we going to have a primary this year, Russ?
Don't know. Looking like there may be one.
Thank you, Russ.
My pleasure.
The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Check out the latest news and live streams on scetv.org. Listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio and watch This Week in South Carolina, a show where I talk with the newsmakers of the week on SCETV, Fridays at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 11:30 a.m. All of that, this podcast, and more is available on SCETV's Super Easy to Use app and southcarolinapublicradio.org. Subscribe to us, and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts. Search us easily on your Android, the NPR One app, or wherever you find podcasts. Also, be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, like friend of the pod, Tollycat. Follow us on Instagram at @scleadpod, and you can see photos from the studio, on assignment, and of course, our dank memes. We're also on Twitter with the same handle at @scleadepod. We have swag, sticker swag that is. Send us a direct message on Twitter or Instagram with your address, and we'll send one your way. Email questions, comments, or gripes to scled@scetv.org. The South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the state newspaper and the Associated Press. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our supervising producer. Tom Posey is our executive producer. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio's studios here in Columbia on August 29th, 2019. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening. Secret message. No one even invited you, Dorian. You don't get any of our trulies. Is that podcast where those guys are talking about the Illuminati?